The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Here's an interesting text from Paul in Offaly. I just want to know, who's going to build the houses? There's a huge shortage of skilled construction workers. I work with a company that has groundwork and site work. We've no drivers, loads of machines and trucks parked up. Can't get staff, be it block layers, carpenters all the time. There's not enough workers to build all the houses, even if it was to happen. The reason for this, the wages are not good enough for the expenses of this country. I'm an experienced operator. I have to work over 45 hours a week just to get 600 euros. At least 70 euro of that goes in fuel every week, never mind the wear and tear on a car. Our first guest, James Benson from the Irish Home Builders Association. This plan requires an additional 27,500 construction workers. Where are they going to come from?
Good evening, Matt. Well, I think that's a combination of looking at our education system to promote not just the third level colleges, but to the good living that can be made in construction. We need to look at our work permits. You know, there's plenty of European counterparts that would love to come into the country and work on some of these projects. But we do have seen in the last number of years an introduction of the sectarial employment order, which looks at minimum wage rates for the different trades. And that's, you know, a good living can be made in that. But your texter is right. You know, they're very ambitious plans here for the numbers. You know, we're talking something in the region of 90,000 social homes in the next number of years, 36,000 affordable homes, 18,000 cost rental. They are big numbers. They're very ambitious, but I think they are achievable. If we look at what the home builders have done, and even in the last year, we will deliver 20,000 homes this year, and that's despite being shut down for almost 3 months of the year. You know, we're here, we're ready to go. You know, we've delivered housing, but we're very keen to see that element of society, you know, those who've been locked out of the market, that they are now supported. And the New Homes First scheme will do that. It will support them. It will bridge the gap. And I would imagine, given the confidence that we will see from this plan, given the committed funding, and I think that's key, that committed funding of 4 billion, you know, up to over 20 billion in the next 4 to 5 years, that will send great confidence to the market. And we will see an immediate bounce on this next year. I think the numbers that we have for this year in delivery from 20,000 will increase to beyond 25,000, 26,000 next year. And they're the sort of areas that we need to be getting into if we're going to achieve the targets that we need to see.
Okay, Kate English, Chief Economist with Cushman & Wakefield. Where's all the money going to come from to do all of this?
That's a very good question, Matt, and I suppose it's one that's on the tip of our minds when we always see these ambitious plans coming from government. You know, we're off the back of a very difficult year where we've had to have a lot of expenditure over the past 18 months off the back of COVID. We have been given assurances by government that we are not going back to the days, I suppose, of where we have very, very strict increases in taxation and stuff like that to offset the cost of all the additional expenditure that had come over the difficult time over the last 18 months. I suppose we are in an environment at the moment where there's a very low interest rates, where it's actually quite cheap for governments and the likes to get loans for additional funding within the market. And I suppose some part of that will come from that, in addition to it, some taxes which are already there at present. I think overall, I think to echo what James said as well, is that, or Ben said as well, is that we, you know, looking at this report overall, I think it is very, very ambitious. They're very high numbers when you look at it overall. But when we look at the short term of the 2022 and the 2023 forecasted figures for delivery, they do actually look quite achievable from where construction levels are at the moment. But it is that breakdown between the private and the social and affordable is where it would have the most amount of questions at the moment.
And if the state is putting in lots of money, Kate, will it be matched at least by the private sector? Will it be regarded as attractive enough for the private sector to actually make the investments and get the returns, particularly when you see controversies at present about the likes of investment funds owning rental accommodation?
Yes, so we have, you know, that's an interesting question, and it's something that has only come up in the last day or so in my conversations every day, is this idea of if we're putting forward this ambitious programme where we have quite a large focus on the social and affordable side of it too, that are we going to end up with an almost of a two-tiered market where previously there was quite an emphasis on the private side, that will we now see the switch to the social side? And by every extent, that is much welcome. We need a huge amount of investment in the social and affordable side of the homes or of the market, but we have got a large institutional investment in the market over the last number of years as well, and we want to make sure that we don't lose that. Because I think the government have acknowledged a lot over the recent time times how money from both sides of the coin is very much so needed in order to make this housing market functional. From the moment, from the outset, I wouldn't see that there is anything to majorly deter from our private institutional funds from leaving the market just yet. But as I said, there's a huge amount of detail in this report, and we do need to go through every element of it in a lot of detail.
Which is why we're not going to do all of the programme today at all, and that we're going to give people the opportunity to read through it. But Kate, it does strike me as well that there's an enormous emphasis been placed politically on using public land for public housing, which is fine. But there's also a requirement then of private developments that instead of 10% being given over to social housing, in future it's going to have to be 20%, part five as it's known, also to include affordable housing as well as social. What's the private sector likely to make of that?
So do remember, Matt, that this is something that has actually come through earlier in the summer, that ride from the 10% to the 20% for the part fee of your social and affordable housing. So the market has had some time to already, I suppose, assess or adjust to this. The big question that is coming through from the private side of the market is, what is that definition of affordability? And I know that was only put to the government even there only recently in the last number of minutes in their press conference as well, because there definitely does seem to be some questions still around that affordability. And that's what makes it difficult even from a valuation perspective when you're looking at land. One other element of the land side of it as well that has come up, particularly this year, so ever before this report was produced, but when we were looking at local authorities, and we do need to be careful about what targets are put on local authorities for what level of social housing they need to supply. Because although they need to be given some form of guidance and there needs to be ambitions put in place for each individual area within the country, we need to be careful that there's not excessive pressure being put on those local authorities to, I suppose, enter almost a bidding war for parcels of land around the country, and that we can lead to a case where there is perhaps overpaying on some land parcels because the local authorities are under pressure to get that land. There definitely are different elements to the land side of it for the market, but some of it has been drip-fed through the summer, so we have had time to digest already.
Okay, I have another guest who I want to get to in one moment, but first, James Benson, again back to you from the Irish Home Builders Association. Is it clear who's going to build all of the social and state housing? Is it going to be done by newly formed state building companies or local authorities employing builders? Or do you think, are your members going to get the job on contract from the state?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a question of one or the other, Matt. And I think most people would agree on that. We're going to see a mix of delivery models across a mix of tenures that will, you know, help us hit that target of 33,000 in the first place and hopefully grow to 40,000. What we do need to be very careful of, that this plan isn't just about numbers. Now, we'll be reviewing the plan quite closely to see, does the plan deliver the type of homes that people and families want? You know, we'll share the ambition to increase the numbers, and we've built homes over the last number of years and we'll continue to do that. I think elements of this plan can make that a reality. However, there are some details that we will need clarity on, such as the planning, and some of those your other guests have touched on. Judicial reviews will be a huge element within that, and we'll be looking at that. That is due to go to consultation in the autumn, and that has a huge impact on a number of uncommenced planning permissions and planning applications going through the system at the moment. Equally, some of the taxation measures, such as the land sharing tax, that will have an impact, and there is further clarity required on that, because that could, if done correctly, could target some of the potential investment needed for services and provision of roads and water, some of the key elements that have been impeding delivery over the last number of years. So if we are to see the introduction of a potential taxation measure, is that taxation, is the generated revenues from that going to be ring-fenced for the site of development where the tax is taken? Will it go towards the roads and water and wastewater that we've seen deficits in to allow the development to happen? Will that money be ring-fenced to be used during the lifetime of the current plan when we need those homes built? They're all key questions and area of clarity that we'll be looking quite closely at over the next number of days.
Let's bring in Brendan O'Sullivan, Director of the Centre for Planning, Education and Research at University College Cork, who was with us last week on the programme in relation to the issue of dereliction. And there's a section in this report today, Housing for All, which looks at that very topic. Did you get much encouragement out of it that there will be a workable plan to try and restore many out-of-use houses and apartments back into use?
Yes, well, my first reaction to the entire plan is to welcome it. And the fact that the government is tackling a whole range of planning or housing-related issues with a whole range of of mechanisms is probably the first time we've seen it. We've tended to see in the past that people would tackle one thing at a time, but now it's very comprehensive. When it comes to the city centres in particular and dereliction, I think there's lots of scope in what we've heard today. They practice, we hear about things like living over the shop, which is, a lot of people say it's a kind of theoretical idea. It's not. A lot of people live over shops already. And I think that the growth in populations in city centres that we've started to see over the last 10 years is now going to improve, especially if these incentives are in place. Up until now, we were really unfairly expecting the private sector, private owners, developers to deliver nearly all of our housing policy. That's the kind of an ideology that crept in over the last 20 or 30 years. Now we're shifting quite significantly back to the role of the public sector. And I think now is a really good time to have these conversations. With COVID, we learned that the relationship between the private and the public good and the private good, that relationship needs to be discussed in kind of mature ways. And I think we really begin to understand that now and how all of the different sectors can do their thing that they're best at as long as they work in tandem with one another. And I think that's what this plan seems to be trying to achieve.
Something I put to Daniel McConnell from the Irish Examiner earlier in the programme, though, in what I've read of the document, it was interesting to me that despite all of the emphasis on what you've just referred to, greater state involvement in the provision of housing, there was a considerable emphasis on making home ownership easier, that there would seem to be a political imperative here, a realisation that a lot of people aren't interested in renting, they want to own, Brendan.
Well, I mean, it was quite interesting just hearing that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach and the Green Party leader at the launch earlier on. I mean, this seems to be an amalgam of different political ideologies, and I don't think it would be very easy for any political party to say that they don't support home ownership. But like, home ownership was the primary and probably the only model of housing that's been promoted for the last 30 years. But even though the rhetoric is all about buyers, investors, and people getting people on the ladder, that's still very important and crucially important, of course. But there's a noticeable shift now to away to other tenures, which are not just temporary things, you know, that you live and you pay rent just for the time being until you can get the money together to go into debt to buy something. There's a kind of ideological mixing together of different ideas here, and we'll have to see how it plays out in the long run. I think that key thing here is that it's public sector investment in public policy, and the public policy is very good. This isn't happening willy-nilly.
Yeah, but
we
Brendan,
have a national planning framework which can guide all of this.
Brendan, there's Brendan in Galway has put a very interesting message in saying, I have a daughter and partner looking to purchase in Galway. They have mortgage approval in principle, but they can't buy anything as Galway City and Galway County Council are buying up all the new developments. It's not fair for young people trying to purchase a home. This is a big issue for many people. For all the talk about losing out to the international investment funds that buy a apartment blocks, it seems that equally the state is a competitor to many people as they try to buy for themselves.
But we need to take a step back from that. I mean, why are the city and county councils doing this? They're doing it because there's a public good imperative in trying to provide housing for all sorts of people. In the Taoiseach's introduction today, he said that something along the lines that if we don't engage in the market and somehow really shift the balance back towards the public, not entirely towards the public, but the shifted balance, we cannot afford to continue the way we're going. The costs, it's not just about the cost of the housing, it's the long-term cost to communities and commuting and all of the other kind of environmental costs that won't be sustainable. Now, there will be people who will, of course, have dreams to build their own home or to buy a property, and they've been investing and saving, and of course that's the case. But there are people in poverty, in housing poverty. I'm not sure what the project has, this new project has said, for example, about direct provision. And there's mention of homelessness, but I don't know what kind of funding is put into that. So we have a serious set of issues out there, which a lot greater set of needs than we would have noticed before.
Okay.
The young person starting off trying to buy the home has has been supported in different ways over the years through tax, mortgage interest relief, all sorts of things in the past. It's very, very difficult for them right now. But there are others as well trying to live. These are not just about properties and investments. This is homes we're talking about and shelter.
Indeed. But Kate English, I want to bring back to you because there's some interesting stuff which doesn't seem to be fully fleshed out in the report in relation to taxes. So, for example, if there's an increase in land value as a result of zoning, there'd be a special tax put on that. If there's vacant lands that could be used for residential or things, there's an intention to perhaps put a tax on those. But when and how significant could those measures be?
And that's exactly the question that we've had, because there was, again, an indication that this vacant land tax was coming down the line with this. And of course, we've seen this in play already, the vacant site levy that has been there, but it just hasn't really been implemented or that effective over the last number of years. But the big question, there still are a lot of unknowns in it as to how it would actually be implemented and what it actually means. I suppose there is also the question of when you look at perhaps a vacant site tax or trying to enforce people to sell land that they were previously sitting on, you know, if there's an element of this, that that's going to go back to the government, we need to weigh up, well, what percentage of tax is going to be on that? If you're sitting on a piece of land and you have, for example, 50% of it going back to the government, you know, people might be intended to sit on it for longer. So we need to balance up again then off the other side of that of, well, what is the land holding tax? So there's many different elements to the market when we look at the tax, particularly when it comes to land, to try and incentivize people to sell land that perhaps they're sitting on or that has gone for change of use. And unfortunately, from the quick look at the report that I've had so far, that those questions don't seem to be answered. But I think that the big question is, when I look at it, is, well, how will this be enforced or how will it actually be achieved? Because we have seen elements like this in the past, but they just haven't come to fruition, really, or haven't actually followed through with them due to capabilities within the local authorities, etc., to actually act on them.
All right, Kate English, thank you. I'm going to finish with you, James Benson from the Irish Home Builders Association, because the ambition in this Housing for All document is to reach 33 houses built per year by 2025, which is 12,000 more than the total built in 2019 before COVID hit. But I remember a time, now it was the Celtic Tiger bubble year, when it was possible to build up to 90,000 houses a year. There are experts saying that we actually need way more than 33,000. We need 40 or 50,000 a year. Why isn't it possible to build 40 or 50,000 a year if we once could do 90,000?
Well, I think, Matt, the ambition with the 33,000 is on average, and I think the expectation when we see further details on the plan will set out those yearly targets, we'll actually see the targets increase to about 40,000 in the latter part of the decade. During the times when we're delivering 90,000 homes, there was a large element of speculative development, and that mightn't necessarily be an area that we want to return to. I think at the moment, our system is probably constraining or impeding a lot of the delivery. As we said, getting through the planning system can be quite difficult if we take a traditional development at the moment. You know, our own members will be able to come and tell me that they can build a home from the foundations up and have the key ready to turn in the door within a 16-week period. However, the time it takes them to get through planning, to identify what services and infrastructure are required and to find funding to make all that happen, that can take 2 to 3 years, if not more, if you even have to go back to see when those lands are zoned. So it's quite complicated, and I don't see us getting back to those levels of 90,000. But 40,000 is entirely possible. We mentioned earlier on that there was a figure of 27,000 more workers required to deliver these types of homes. We've talked about public and private delivery. There's another element within this conversation as well. It's around technology and innovation and bringing efficiencies and greater efficiencies into our delivery where we can promote scale, innovation centres of excellence. They're sort of areas that we need to invest in where we can see modern methods of construction coming to the fore and help bolster our supply, for which we've already seen the private industry doing.
Okay.
The onus has been on the private industry up till now, but it will take a mix of all measures and all supports and everyone working together to deliver this plan.
Okay, James Benson from the Irish Home Builders Association, Kate English, Chief Economist with Cushman and Wakefield, and Brendan O'Sullivan, Director of the Centre for Planning, Education and Research at UCC. Thank you all for joining us. We will have lots more on this topic tomorrow once we've had a chance to digest the report properly.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.